All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf, the beautiful daf ahead of us. Today's Chav Gimel. We are picking up 23. We are picking up on Chav Beis and with Beis 22b, and we're going to pick up by the Mishnah. Last Mishnah on the page 22b. Holy Mishnah on the page towards the bottom. Marchikin es asula min hashovach arba amos. So we distance the ladder from the dovecote. This is from the dovecote for amos. So let's say, remember again, dovecote kishmo kainhu is the place where a person raises doves. So you have to go ahead. Essentially, what the Gemara is saying, or the Mishnah is saying, is you can't leave a ladder leaning against a dovecote. So not only can you not leave it leaning against a dovecote, but you need to distance it a distance of at least dalet amos from the dovecote. Why? Kadesh lo tikpots hanamia. In order that anemia is like a weasel. In order that the weasel, in other words, anemia is just an example, but the concern over here is what? If you leave a ladder against the dovecote, that gives predatory animals the opportunity to climb up and to get into the dovecote. Therefore, you have to go ahead and distance the ladder from the dovecote, at least dalet amos. Vesakosel min ha-maschila, dalet amos. Similarly, if I'm building a wall, there is a wall setback of dalet amos from my friend's gutter. Why? That's maschila. Why is there a wall setback of dalet amos from my friend's gutter? Kadeshe zokef hasasulam. In order that he is able to go ahead and he needs room in order to place his ladder, meaning my neighbor needs the room to place his ladder against his gutter so as to be able to clean out his gutters. Okay, says the Gemara. So it would appear that our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Yossi. How so? Because Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that essentially everybody could do whatever they want in their own field. That also, remember, we spoke about the idea that there is a 25 amma setback. If my friend has a bar up fit, there's a 25 amma setback, according to the Rabbanon, when I plant a tree, in order that what? That the roots not grow out and negatively impact my friend's bar. Yet Rabbi Yossi is the one who says, listen, I could dig in my field, Reuven could dig in his field, and everybody is permitted to do whatever they want in their own field. So the Gemara suggests that our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Yossi. How so? Look at Rashi. Lema masis ndlok Rabbi Yossi. Depalik b'seifa depirkin v'noteh esenach bar u'betuvei mili ikab masis ndivada lak Rabbi Yossi ela lema avzu de sulam v'shovach tlok Rabbi Yossi. So we'll say, this idea of the sulam and shovach must mean the idea that the Mishnah says that I have to distance my ladder from my friend's dovecote for amos. But why? According to Rabbi Yossi, I should be able to put my ladder wherever I want as long as what? As long as what? As long as it's my property. Right? I can't put my ladder on Reuven's property, but as long as it's in my property, I should be permitted to go ahead and put it wherever I want. Yet the Mishnah tells me that there is a mandatory ladder setback from the dovecote. So again, this does not reflect the view of Rabbi Yossi, to which the Gemara says, Afilutim Rabbi Yossi. It's not true. Our Mishnah could even reflect the view of Rabbi Yossi. I ha amar Ravashi ki avinan beiraf kahana hava amar modi Rabbi Yossi begirei didei. So we'll say, even Rabbi Yossi, who says that under normal circumstances, you could do what you want as long as you're operating within your own property, says that as long as what? You are not directly impacting and damaging another. We'll say, it's what we call girei delay. Girei delay means your own arrows. See, even Rabbi Yossi says, I can do what I want in my property, even if it technically has a damaging impact on you, or can have a damaging impact, as long as what? As long as it does not directly negatively impact you. But if my actions actively, directly, negatively impact and damage you, then I'm not permitted to do it, even though I'm operating on my property. So to avir hachanami, zinnan de bahadi demanachlei, yasa bukar bekafza. Because we'll say, in this case over here, sometimes the weasel is just looking for a way into the dovecote, and what happens? He's hiding in his hole, and as soon as I put that ladder there, boom, that weasel is going to take advantage and get into the dovecote. So therefore, I will say that would be a case of girei didei, where the placement of my ladder is directly and negatively impacting my friend's dovecote. I have a hagramu, but 1 second, is this not an act of causation? As well as, let's say, again, I put the ladder again within dalet amos of my friend's dovecote, I put it there, the weasel jumps out, jumps onto the ladder, jumps into the dovecote, is that not a case of grama? Is that not a case of causation? And again, normally we assume that grama is patra benizakin, right? We assume that causation, causative damage, is not going to be liable. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abtuhi bar Masna also maris grama benizakin aser." You see from here that what? That there was like causative damages one would be liable for. Rav Yosef, so the Gemara tells the story. Rav Yosef, Hava loy hano ta'ale. Rav Yosef and Rav Yosef ta'ale, Rashi says, are dekalim kitanim, small palm trees. Tahavu tap of chav gimel amadalef. Tahavu asu umni viyasi tusayu. So what happens? Rav Yosef had these palm trees, and small palm trees. Blood letters used to sit underneath it and go ahead and let blood. I don't know if that's okay. They used to go ahead and draw blood. So what happens? Va'asu or vi'achli dama, the ravens would come, they would lick up the blood. V'salki abay ta'alvi mafzi latamre. Then after the ravens licked up the blood, what would they do? They would fly up to the top of the tree, and they would end up smearing the blood on the dates. Meaning they would then go sit on the tree. They would get the blood on the dates, and thereby going ahead and really ruining the dates. So Amarluhu Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said to the blood letters, Afikuli kor kor mehacha. Literally, get this crowing out of here. In other words, get the crows, right? Get the crows, get the birds out of here. Meaning what he was saying to the blood letters is, listen, you are causing me a loss. Get out of here. Amarli Abai v'hagramu. Abai said, but one second, it's grama. Meaning the blood letters aren't really doing anything wrong, right? They're just drawing, they happen to be drawing the blood. But lamais again, they're not damaging the dates. It happens to be the blood that spills on the ground. Ultimately, is being picked up by the birds and being lifted up to the dates. But they're not doing anything. Amalei hachiam raftui maras azosomeres grama benizakin aser. Let's say, what do you see from here? You see from here that it is prohibited to engage in causative damages. That you are not permitted to cause someone damages even through a grama, even through an indirect fashion. Ay baha achsiklu. But one second, let's say the case over here is the blood letters had already been engaging in this practice underneath these trees of Rav Yosef for a while. So did the blood letters not have a chazaka on the usage of the palm trees, or the area underneath the palm trees from bloodletting? People say this is actually very interesting. Ha'am Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Barabua, Ein chazaka l'nizakin. But say, we're going to actually talk about this later on. I mean, not today, but later on in this Masechta. It's a fascinating discussion. There's no such thing as a chazaka for damaging actions. In other words, if I do, let's say what we will discuss essentially is an important yisod, which is that if I go ahead and I use your property or I use someone's property in a certain way for a certain amount of time in an uncontested fashion, then what's the halacha? The halacha is I establish a chazaka of use. Now, how that is, the parameters of that we'll discuss. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is, if I'm using someone's property in a way that is damaging to that person's property, even if I used it for a long time, and even if the person never said anything, ein chazaka l'nizakin. There is no such thing as a chazaka for actions that are damaging to the property owner. Therefore, again, even if the blood letters were there for years, Lamai said their actions are damaging, and therefore, again, they established no chazaka on the land. But one second, did we not discuss about this? Rav Mari Amar Bikutra, Rav Zavid Amar Bebesakise. Yet Rav Mari said, yes, it's true. In Grama Benizakin, Rav will say, for what types of usage? That, let's say Reuven's going ahead and he's doing something that causes a lot of smoke on my property. So for that, there is no chazaka, even if he's been doing it for a long time, because that causes active, visible damage. Similarly, Abeis HaKise, let's say Reuven's been using my property as a bathroom, right? He's been using it as a latrine for a long amount of time. So then what's happened? Like an outhouse. And remember again, the whole Chaput Beis HaKise, look at Rashi, that's actually very important. Sha'agabe karka, v'nira le'inayim, shekar chaya bate kisa shavam. So we'll say, a Beis HaKise, without getting into Talmudic, you know, outdoor plumbing. But, you know, again, a Beis HaKise was not a hole in the ground. The Beis HaKise was where there was human waste on top of the ground. The idea over here is that I can see this and I can smell it, and therefore again it poses an active damage to the landowner, So therefore, the Rav Mari is saying, when do we say in chazaka l'nizakin? That was in a case of like smoke or like the Beis Hakisei. Amarle hani l'didi da'anina datoi ki kutcha Beis Hakisei damulet. So Rav Yosef said to me, he says, I am an anina. I'm in what we call, I guess, like an istinus. A fastidious individual, right? A delicate person. So he says, for me, the blood on the dates, because I must say, the blood on the dates, if you think about it, is not an act of loss, because technically speaking, could be washed off. So he also says, but just for me seeing this, and for me experiencing this, for me, this is no different than the smoke, this is no different, ultimately, than the bathroom. And therefore again, I am ordering the blood letters to stop. So we'll say, so what comes out over here, just the Gemara is kind of teasing us a little bit with a couple of very interesting ideas. First of all, the Gemara is bringing up the sugya of grama b'nizakin. Is there such a thing, or is there liability for causative damages? And number two, in the world of chazaka, so the Gemara is establishing ein chazaka l'nizakin. That at the end of the day, no matter how long you have used a piece of property, if your usage is injurious to the owner, so ultimately you can establish no chazaka over that property. Good. Says the Mishnah, Marchigin as haShelach min ha'er chamishim amah, we distance a dovecote from the city 50 amas. 50 amas. And we'll say, now why is that? Look at Rashi. Marchigin as haShelach min ha'er, shayonim mafsidin zar'one ginos. But this is actually quite interesting. So remember, with the dovecote, it's a fascinating thing. These are free-range doves. So happens are free-range doves. They are eating whatever they're eating from the field. They come home to live in this dovecote. So the idea is, what we don't want is, we don't want the doves feeding on people's personal property. So what do? We distance the dovecotes from the outskirts of the city, 50 amas. This way, again, now what we'll see is 50 amas seems to be the amount that a dove will travel for food. So therefore, again, the dove will not feed on any of the local fields. Similarly, a person should not make a dovecote in his property unless what? Unless he has enough land to provide space 50 amos in every direction. So if I want to go ahead and put a dovecote in my property, there has to be at least 50 amos between the dovecote and my property line in every single direction, so that the doves will feed on my property and nowhere else. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, base arbakurin. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's not enough to have 50 amos in one direction, in each direction. Rather, you have to have a land of four kor. So we'll say four kor would ultimately mean 275 amas in each direction. So Yehuda seems to say that the dove flies much more to scavenge for food, and therefore again you need a much greater distance in each direction of your property. Male shegra hayona, because that is the amount that is considered to be, let's say, the direct flight of the owner. If the dove takes flight, it'll travel 275 amas at a clip uninterrupted. So the Gemara says, Vim lakho afilu beisru bahari b'cheskas. Now, this is very interesting. However, if you go ahead and you purchased a piece of property, or I should say differently, you purchased a dovecote on a piece of property, but there is not 50 amos from the dovecote to the edge of the property line, so obviously the previous owner established a chazaka on this dovecote with these property dimensions, and therefore either purchaser and permitted to use it as well. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Ve'im lakho kimoshehu imakarka. So we'll say, so the case over here is, remember we just got finished saying that, if you want to put a dovecote on your property, you need at least 50 amas in every direction of the dovecote. Comes along the Gemara says, but let's say I bought a dovecote from Reuven, and in Reuven's field, there's 20 amas from the dovecote to the edge of the field in every direction. So the Mishnah says, I am permitted to purchase that dovecote, the purchase stands, and I need not change anything in the circumstances. Rashi says, Vim lacho, kimoshu, I bought the dovecote as it is, in my karka, with the land, afilo eno kol saliva pela base rova hakav. Even if there's only a quarter of a kav of land, harehu becheskaso shai hochzak bo arishon kein. Since Reuven had a chazaka to use the land like this, therefore when I purchase the land, I essentially purchase his chazaka as well. So, says the Gemara, Chamishim Amah V'sulo. Now the Mishnah makes it sound like a dove only flies 50 amas. Is that true? A dove only flies 50 amas? Or mini, Harezer Kasha, Ein Parsin Nishbin Leonim, You cannot go ahead and set out a trap for a dove. Ella imkin hayarachok mina yishuv shloshim ris. Yet Abosai, we learned that what? You cannot set a trap for a dove unless, of course, you are distancing your trap from yishuv, from the yishuv, from habitation, from the city, right? 30 ris. Abosai, just so you understand, 30 ris is approximately 8,000 amos. So I'll say that's a pretty significant distance. But it's telling me is what? Because what am I concerned about? If I'm going ahead and setting dove traps, so I'll say, what do I have to be concerned about? Trapping someone else's dove. So therefore the Gemara seems to tell me over here that's what? I need to distance my traps from the nearest city or from the nearest habitation. 30 ris, 8,000 amos, so that any dove that comes into my trap is a free dove. It doesn't belong to anyone. So that's obviously much more than the 50 amos of the Mishnah. Amar Abaye, meshat shayetuva, ukreisayu bechamishim amsamalya. This is interesting what I'll say. Abaye says it's true. Doves fly a very long distance, but they fill their stomachs. In other words, they eat only what they find within the first 50 amos. Remember, again, the Mishnah Bosai is not concerned with the duration or the length of dove flight. The Mishnah is concerned with dove consumption. And therefore explains the Gemara, that Lamaisa, they could fly a much greater distance, but at the end of the day, will only eat what they find within the first 50 amos. The Sulo, the Gemara says, is that true? Nothing else? Well, Tanya, but we learned, Obi Yishuv, Afilu mea mil lo yifros. Yet we learned about that in inhabited areas, one should not go ahead and spread out the traps even for 100 mil, which makes it sound like, again, that even out the flight, the dove could go ahead and travel much further. Rav Yosef Amar B'Yishuv Kramim. Rav Yosef Rabosai, that Braisa that spoke about the idea that you have to distance the traps 100 mil was talking about a situation where there are contiguous vineyards. Look at Rashi. B'Yishuv Kramim. Sheparachin Mikarim Lekarim. V'Shatim Harbe. Both say, if we're talking about an area where there is a contiguous vineyards, so then ultimately, again, the birds travel a much longer distance. Why? Because they're jumping vine to vine to vine. So that's so they could travel a much longer distance. Rava Amar, B'Yishuv Shovchin. Rava says, what are we talking about? Where there are a lot of dovecotes. So therefore, the dove travels from coat to coat. So we'll say, essentially what the Gemara is answering is like this. The dove, when it just has to take straight flight, and there are no, there are no dove rest stops. You know, there's nowhere to stop. There's nowhere for it to land and continue. So then it'll travel a certain amount, right? Whether that amount is 50 amos, whether that amount is shloshim ris, whether it's ultimately again 10, whatever it is. But when there is habitation in the middle, whether that is vineyards or whether it's other dovecotes, so of course then the dove could travel a much further distance. You'll say to yourself, who cares about the duration or the trajectory of dove flight? So it matters, because if you are a dove hunter and ultimately again you are setting traps, so you have to know at what distance you need to set your traps in order to avoid catching a dove that is owned by someone else. But say mishum shofchin gufayu. But one second, Rava, if you're talking about, again, we were talking about a place where there's a lot of dovecotes, then you should have to remember, you have to distance the traps from the furthest dovecote. Ibaisema diday, vibaisema de kanani, vibaisema de hefker. So it could either be where those other dovecotes belong to me, and therefore again I have obviously no obligation of a trap setback from my own dovecotes, or they could belong to a Gentile, in which case, the Gemara seems to be saying over here, is should the dove of a Gentile wander into my trap, it would be permitted. Or, the other possibility is that we're talking about that they are hefker, they're ownerless dovecotes. In other words, no one owns them, or at least now no one owns them, and therefore again, when the bird is hopping from dovecote to dovecote, there's a certain distance I have to distance the traps from the city, but not from these abandoned dovecotes. Fine, says the Gemara, Rabbi Huda Omer, base arba kurin. So remember, Rabbi Huda disagreed with the Tanakama, whereas the Tanakama said that I need, if I put up a dovecote in my property, I need 50 amos in every direction. Rabbi Huda says, no, I need 275 amos in every direction, but so here's the operative piece we're going to be focusing on. If I bought a piece of property that has a dovecote on it, and what? There's less than 50 amos in every direction, then the same way the previous owner had a chazaka to use this dovecote, I purchased that chazaka as well. Amar bless you. Amar Papa Vitim Rav Zvid. Zosimers, this teaches us, and this is actually very interesting. Toanin lelokeach, vetoanin liyoresh. So this teaches us that Beis Din advocates for a purchaser, And Beis Din advocates for someone who inherits property as well. In other words, both sides. But this is not, look at Rashi just a moment. Torah and Liyorosh, Torah and Lokeach. Beis Din, Poschin Peh, Vitaina Liyorosh, Lokeach. She'ir Adam Alehem, V'yesh Lo Edim Shehaisa Shalo, O Shalav Osav, V'ze Omer Yirashtev Me'aba, O Lakachtev Me'ploni, She'ochsak Bo Yomim Rabim. So both sides, let's say again, I inherit property, or for our purposes, I purchase a piece of property, and it's known, there's Eidos, that the previous owner lived on that property for a significant amount of time, long enough to establish Chazakah, whatever that amount of time is. Let's say again, I'm able to produce witnesses that the previous owner lived on that land for 3 years. So listen to this. Essentially, the Gemara is saying is the following. If I purchase a piece of property, then Beis Din advocates on my behalf. As long as I could go ahead and prove that the previous owner ultimately went ahead and lived there with 3 years of chazaka, then ultimately Beis Din will advocate on my behalf that what? That I should be permitted to have the continued same use of the property, even if the use of that property differs a bit from the normal conventional halachic norms. Like, for example, in this case over here, I'm buying a dovecot in a piece of property that there are not 50 amas between the dovecot and the border of the land. But as long as I could go ahead and bring Eidos, that Reuven lived here for 3 years, Beis Din will say, okay, if Reuven had the chazaka, I have the chazaka as well. So the Gemara says, Yoresh Tanina. So we learned this already by Yoresh. Haba Mishum Yerusha, Eino Tzarech Taina. That the Bible says, if somebody inherits land, I don't have to go ahead and prove my father's ownership of land. Let's say I inherit land, and so somebody comes along and says that was my land. So I will say I don't have an obligation to prove who my father bought the land from. That's not my obligation. As long as there is Eidos that my father lived on this land for more than 3 years, then ultimately, again, that is enough. So the Gemara says, however, lokeach et shrichalei. Rabbi say, we need to teach the case of a person who purchases property. So the Gemara says, lokeach nami tarina. We also learn the case of the purchaser. What's the case of the purchaser? Lokeach chatzer ubaziz in the gusturos. Suppose, listen to this, if a person, I purchased the chatzer, now this is actually really fascinating, I purchased the chatzer, and Rabbi say, the chatzer has zizin v'gustros. Gizin v'gustros means, like there are beams or different things protruding from my property into the Rishus HaRabim, into the public domain. So what happens? So they give, look at Rashi. Lakach chatzer ubag zizin, b'masnisin, b'cheskas abat and tnan, in motzin zizin v'gustros Rishus HaRabim, adam abon abayis lo yotzi, rashi akoros tikras lo Rishus HaRabim, avalim rotze konis binyano l'soch shalom, Ubona umotzi roshe korosov lechutz. Then laka chatzir bazizim vegustros yotzish sarabim harehu becheskasa shebitz. So listen to this. So if I'm building a property, I can't have beam protrusions into the sarab. So listen, you know, what do you call it? You know,
cantilevered
balcony. A what?
Yeah.
Like the thing you build on your deck.
A pergola.
Alright, the thing I build on your deck with the protrusions. Right? So imagine, like you have it for your, so imagine for a moment. I'm sorry?
Arbor?
Arbor.
Pergola.
Yeah, the top, arbor. Good. So, thank you. So the point over here is there's wood sticking into the Rosh Hashanah, right? That's right, trellis, right? Good, whatever it is. Okay, enough. Good. So what happens is portrayed there's something. I both say you are not permitted to have, which if you think about this, obviously very logical, you can't have anything from your personal property protruding into the Rosh Hashanah. So let's say I both say, but I purchase a piece of property from Reuven, and he has his deck thing protruding into the Rosh Hashanah. So I both say, so the halacha is, I have a chazaka, meaning I have purchased his chazaka as well. To which the Gemara said, Tzvicha. So let's say, so now essentially we've learned the same principle in both cases. What's the same principle? That whether you inherit land or you purchase land, you inherit the usage of the previous owner, and we assume as long as you can prove that the previous owner has established requisite chazakah by usage or by domicile for the last 3 years, then that's all. You don't have to prove anything else. To which the Gemara says, I need both of these cases. You know why? So we'll say, because in the case of a Shesarabim, I could have said that at the end of the day, he's not really building a Shesarabim. Maybe what happened? Maybe he recessed his property, and although it looks like it's protruding into the Shesarabim, in fact, the property line is really right under the protrusions. Einami, achuli achol b'nei Shesarabim gabe, or perhaps, again, he got a dispensation from the Rosh Hashanah. Now, we'll discuss in later sugyas how you do that. But in the case of Yerusha, maybe I have to prove ultimately again how my father attained ownership. And if it would have just said the case, over here, then what? So we'll say, if it would have just said the case of Yerusha, I might have said that, you know what, maybe that's because my father was able to mafayes, he was able to appease whoever it was, or the other individual, the close neighbors, were mochel, the proximity of the shovach, aval rabim man payes uman shavik. But by the rabim, rabosai, who has the right to go ahead and be appeased? Who has the right to go ahead and forgive the rights of the rabbim? Therefore, tzicha. So bottom line is, halacha lemaisa, if you go ahead and you purchase a piece of property, or you inherit a piece of property, and the property does not conform to the normal conventional standards, like for our purposes, we've established, let's assume right now, that you need at least a 50 amma setback from the nearest property for your shovach. I inherit or I purchase a piece of property where there's only 25 amas between the shovach and the property line. As long as I could establish that the previous owner, whether that's my father or whether ultimately again that's Reuven, the previous owner, had 3 years of chazaka, that is enough. I don't have to know how he established chazaka. I don't have to know how he worked this out with the neighbors, but as long as I know, I could prove, I have eidos, that he established chazaka, I inherit that pre-existing chazaka as well. Says the Gemara, Harihu b'chazkaso. But how can you say that? We said before that what? There is no chazaka for something that is deleterious or that is damaging to my neighbor. Having a shovach only 25 amas away from my neighbor is nezek. So then how could I establish a chazaka for nezek? To which the Gemara says, Rav Mari Amar Bekutra, Rav Zavid Amar Beisakise. No, what type of nezek? Both say that is clear, obvious, and apparent nezek. Something like smoke, something like the Beis HaKisei, where ultimately the offense is blatant. So that's when you can't have chazaka for nizakin. But for something that's not as blatant, like the dove coat, one could establish chazaka. Good. Amud Bezer, we'll say the Mishnah. Nipo hanim tza v'socha mishmama. We'll say this is an incredible case. So what happens? I find a little dove. Dovelo. Right? I find a little dove over here. Hanim tza v'socha mishmama. So we'll say what happens? I find a little dove next to the shovach. Now, obviously, anything you find in the shovach, we know belongs to that shovach. I find the dove within 50 amis of the shovach. What's the halacha? Harehu shabal hashovach. Ultimately, again, that dove is the property of the nearest shovach. In other words, we assume that any dove found within 50 amis of the dove coat is a member of that dove coat. Chutz mechamishim amo, harehu shlomotzo. We'll say if I find the dove, however, what? Out 50 amas away from the nearest dove coat, then what? Excuse me. I find it more than 50 amas away from the nearest dove coat, then what? I'm permitted to keep it. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, Harehu shamoto, nimtza bein shtei shovchos. So we'll say, what happens if the dove is found in between two dove coats? He's like Gittin, you know, Karov lezeh, Karov lezeh, Karov lezeh shalom. So we'll say, Karov lezeh shalom. So we'll say, the idea is what? The idea is that whichever, again, so if I have two dove coats, so let's say again, well, so let's say for argument's sake, those dove coats, again, either they're 50 amas are absorbed within each other, whichever dove coat the dove is closest to, that's the dove coat the dove belongs to. Mechza al mechza. What happens if it's mamish found right in the middle of the area between the two dove coats? Then, yachloku. Then Rabbi said the owner of the two dove coats split the value of that dove. Fine. So Rabbi says, now this leads the Gemara to a very interesting observation. the Gemara says, based on this, what do we see? Amar Rav Chanina, Rov v'Karov, Holchin Acharov. Both is actually very interesting. So remember, there are different ways in which in Halacha we go ahead and we resolve certain what we'll call situational ambiguity. And the way we do that is either through Rov, majority, or Karov, proximity. Majority, proximity. So we'll say, let's say again, when using Rov and Karov, let's say that yields two different results. So which one ultimately wins out? So Rabbi Chanina says, when you have a conflict between the majority and proximity, Holchin Achar HaRov. We go ahead and we follow the majority. V'afal gav diruba doraisa, the kurba doraisa. I will say, even though both of these concepts are ultimately midaraisa. Well, now take a look at Rashi over here. This is actually really interesting. Rov v'karov, Rashi says, in bad davar lefanenu, v'yesh bo lehalich achar harov, v'hu kach, him telich po achar hakarov, inu kach. So we'll say, so again, let's say I have a matter of ambiguity that comes before me. And if I follow the Rov, I'll have one result. And if I follow Karov, proximity, I'll have a different result. What's the halacha? Halach po achar harov, we follow the Rov. So Rov, right, we let the majority, well, and we'll see how this plays out. But this is actually very interesting. So we know Rov, because the Torah says explicitly, Achare Rabim Lahatos. We'll see it, not in this week's parasha, but in next week's parasha. Mishpatim, Torah tells us that you have to follow the majority. We'll say, where do we know the concept of Karov? This is amazing. V'korva d'oraisa d'chsiv v'ayoha ir hakrova. We'll say, you know where we learn the concept of Karov, of proximity? From Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa, remember again, is the situation where you find a corpse in between two cities. You don't know what happened. The person was murdered, but you don't know what happened. So what happens? The elders of the closest city have to go through this process of bringing out the calf, decapitating the calf, washing their hands over the carcass. We'll say, so we're assuming liability based on what? Based on proximity. Karov. So you see that both Rov and Karov are both Doraisa concepts. But says Rabbi Chanina that when there's a conflict between Rov and Karov, we follow Rov. Even though they're both Doraisa concepts. Afilu Achi, Ruba Adif. Nevertheless, I will say, Rov will be Adif. We'll go ahead and we will allow the laws of majority to determine the outcome of the circumstance. So is that true? Massive Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says, but 1 second. Vahayaha irakrova ela chalal. So also remember again, by Egla Rufa, like we just said, which is the source for the concept of Karov. So the Torah says that the closest city, the elders will come out. Now we can infer from that, that's what? Va'afa gav di'ika achrisa dinafisha mineh. Now that sounds like what? We look for the closest city, even though what? There may be another city that although it's not as close to the corpse, has what? Has more people. Yet, we'll still go with proximity over majority. So you're saying that whenever there's a conflict between Rov and Karov, we go after Rov. But from the case of Egla Rufa, would appear that even if there's another city with more people, but you go after the closest city, even if there's fewer people. So you see that when you have a conflict between Rov and Karov, you go after what? You go after Karov. To which the Gemara says, no, Bidaleka. The case, we'll say the paradigmatic case of Egla Rufa, is where there is no other city with more people in closer proximity. Or I should say differently. There is no city with a greater number of people. So I says, 1 second. There's always another city with a greater number of people. But Lazer Basa Ruba Da'alma. Others will say, on a very simple level, the majority of the, let's say they find the corpse next to City A. So City A has the quote unquote Karov, right? It has proximity. I will say, but it doesn't have Rov, right? The Rov of the world does not live in City A. So why wouldn't we assume that the murderer came from the Rov of the world? To which the Gemara says, Bioshevis Ben Aharim. Because most of the paradigmatic case over here is where the city, which has proximity, is sitting in, it's nestled in between mountains. I was going to say, nestled in between mountains. Look at Rashi Ben Aharim. Shein Derech Rotzchim Lavo Mimkomos Achirim Lakan. I was saying that essentially we're talking about a place over here that is cut off a little bit from pedestrian traffic. That unless you live here, people would not normally be here. So the Gemara says, Tanan, yet we learned, Nipo Hanimsa Basocha Mishimavo Amo Harehu Shabala Shovach. I was saying, yet we learned that what? That if you find a dove within 50 amas of the dove coat, it belongs to that particular dove coat. So we'll say, that's a din in Karov, right? That's a din ultimately in proximity. Even though there might be another dove coat, Rabbi said, that although it may be further away, may have a larger dove population. So what do you see from here? You see that when you have a conflict between Karov and Rov, you go with what? You go with Karov. We're looking at proximity. That contradicts Rabbi Hanina, who says that when there's a conflict between Rov and Karov, you go after Rov. To which the Gemara answers, B'deleka. No. The case of the Mishnah Abosai is there is no other dovecote. Iachi, if that's the case, Ema Seifa, Chutz Mechamishim Ama Arehu Shal Motzo. The Abosai, then what do you do at the end of the Mishnah? Because the end of the Mishnah said, let's say you found the dove outside the 50 Amas, so then ultimately what? Then the person who finds it is permitted to keep it. V'i B'deleka, Abosai, if we're talking about a case where there is no other dovecote, then what? Then Vadai Me'ahu Nafal. Let's say, if you're telling me there's no other dove coat, then even if what? Even if I find that dove outside of 50 Amos, let's say, I should assume that what? That dove belongs to that dove coat, because there is no other dove coat in the area. So where else did the dove come from? To which the Gemara says, Hacham Ayaskinon, what's the case? Bimadda. Where ultimately, again, the dove is hopping. Let's say, now look at Rashi just a moment. Hacham Ayaskinon. We could explain our entire Mishnah b'madida. Ultimately, again, with hopping. What does this mean? Begozal she'ino yachol lof, ela bididui ma'at ma'at. Well, so we're dealing with a dove that cannot yet fly. If it cannot yet fly, so how does it get from place to place? It hops around. So we'll say, so what does Rashi say? Hilchach, tocham yishim ama, shabala shovach, fa'afagav v'ikach rini dinafish. Because we'll say this why in this case over here, when it's found within 50 amas of the dovecote, even though there might be another dovecote that has more doves, we assume that this dove is the property of the other, the karov, the closer dovecote. Why? Because we'll say it is known that when doves can't fly and they can only hop, up to 50 amas away. The chutzah chamishim shamotzo. So we'll say what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. We're dealing now over here with a dove that ultimately again could only hop. If it's found within 50 amas, then what? Then the mice, again, we assume that it came from the karav, it came from the nearest dovecote, or I should say the dovecote within 50 amas, because the Maisa Madada can't go any more than that. If on the other hand you find it outside of the 50 amas, it cannot have come from that first dovecote, and therefore ultimately it is the property of the one who finds it. The Gemara says, the Amr Rav Ukva Bar Chama, Kala Medade, Eino Medade Yos Reminun. Any dove that does not yet fly and is hopping cannot hop more than 50 amas. Fine. By Rabbi Yirmiyah, we'll say this is an interesting exchange. So Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following kasha. So we'll say, so first of all, you should know in general, we paskin like that statement of Rabbi Hanina, that when there is a conflict between Rov and Karov, we go after Rov. So when there is a conflict between majority and proximity, we generally will allow majority to govern the particular halacha. Again, it's not true in every single circumstance, but as a klal, as a general principle, that's what we accept. So Rabbi Yirmiyah, so listen to this. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following kasha. Raglo achas pesochnu namo, veraglo achas chutz mechamishim amo. We'll say, what happens if you find the dove? One foot is in the 50 amas by the shovach, one foot is outside of the 50 amas of the shovach. What's the halacha? To which the Gemara says, va'al do, afku Rabbi Yirmiyah mibei midrasha. And for this, they threw Rabbi Yirmiyah out of the base medrash. As well, they said to him, like, really? Really? Like that's what you're going to bother us with? And I will say, now the truth is, this is actually a very strange idea. Because the truth is, you'll say to yourself, I come on, that's a ridiculous question. The Gemara always deals with questions like this. So Tosis actually discusses, if you look at Rashi, excuse me, Tosis, so Tosis says, Va'al daf kol Rabbi Yirmiyah mibei midrasha, in the farish mishum de boi milsa de lo shchicha klal, deichi yisrami de ragla achas to chamishim, ragla achas chos le chamishim, bitzimtzum, to ashke chamas nisi nami v'chai gab, no, I read, diktani mechza al mechza yachloku. Now both say, I may be listening to Rabbi Yirmiyah, that's so ridiculous, why? Because you can never have a dove that exactly has one foot inside the 50, one foot outside the 50. It's not true because the Mishnah said it. The Mishnah spoke about a case of mechza mechza, where let's say again you find the dove exactly in between two dove coats. So it's Rabbi said that we do entertain this possibility of straddling this area. So what's so crazy about one foot in, one foot out? to which the Gemara says, "Venira, Venira the Rabbeinu Tam, demishum hachiyafku, mishum demadida eino medad deklal yosem yachamishimama, afilo ragla achos, dechomidos chachamim kenhu." To which Tosos explains, because now, since we've established this case, ultimately as one of hopping, so we've established that Chazal's shiurim are absolute. Chazal said that ultimately, again, what? Ultimately, a hopping dove only hops 50 amas. And 50 amas means 50 amas. 50 amas doesn't mean 50 amas and a dove's foot. It means 50 amas. So once you know, what they're telling Rabbi Yirmiyahu is, once we've established the shear, stop it. Stop it. So I'll say, so it's interesting, by the way, I just have to tell you. So I'll just tell you two quick things on this. Thank you, Chachmas Moshi. Two quick things on this. So first of all, the Arizal writes the following. Listen to this. The Arizal says, "Dehin Reb Yirmiyah hayashol shelos tamid shelos." I'm sorry, hayashol tamid shelos. Kimo shemuva harbe pamim b'shas by Reb Yirmiyah ulefisha haysak havanasa latova ulahagdil tor ladir b'shelosav ubayshua vafkul migdrashav. So the Arizal says that the other people in the base medrash mistreated Reb Yirmiyah. Reb Yirmiyah was always that guy with questions. Always that guy with questions. I will say, now, you know, sometimes people ask questions, just ask questions. They just like to hear themselves speak. That wasn't Reb Yirmiyah. Reb Yirmiyah's point was to ask questions to get the conversation going. You know, sometimes the questions themselves are there just to fuel thinking. And the Arizal says, they embarrassed Reb Yirmiyah. They embarrassed him by throwing him out of the base medrash. Listen to this. Lachain yesh lo schar tov l'malo. Therefore, Reb Yirmiyah had incredible schar in the Olam HaEmes. Ki kol ha-she'elos ha-nish'olos b'msifta d'rakia hu ha-shoel osam v'nish'olos al yado. I will say, now I could just read this to you. This is from the Arizal and Shar HaGilgulim. So I don't know what this means. All I can tell you is the following. The Arizal writes that in the msifta d'rakia, in the yeshiva shel malo, Rabbi Yirmiyah is the one who asks all of the questions in the Beis Medrash. So the Arizal says in the schus of his desire to stimulate Talmud Torah, Torah discussion here in this world, and because he was embarrassed for doing so, his schar is that he gets to pose the questions in the Masifta Derakia, which is absolutely quite amazing. So I'll say that's on. I don't know what it means. I was just riveted when I saw it. So there's another idea that I want to share with you also. Another idea that the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, also brings down, and he says the following. He quotes from his father. Listen to this. Quotes the cast from Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah's kasha was achas mi bifnim, right? Viraglo achas mi bachutz. One foot on the inside, one foot on the outside. What's the halacha? And they threw Rabbi Yirmiyah out of the base medrash. So the Pnei Menachem says amazing. He says, listen to this. Shit, Rabbi Yirmiyah, get ready for this. Sheish Yisrael. Tzarech lihios b'shtei raglov bifnim. We'll say, in life, if a person wants to remain rooted in Torah, you can't have one foot here and one foot there. Rather, again, both feet must be rooted ultimately within Torah. V'kashiru omeid berega achos b'chutz ein zetov. When ultimately, again, one of those feet is planted b'chutz, outside of Torah, that is not going to be good. Sarach shiyiyu kulu bifnim. And the Pnei Menachem says something amazing. He says, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yirmiyah says, what happens if it's raglo achas b'chutz, raglo achas bifnim, al do afkuhu mibeid rasha. We'll say, you know, it's an amazing yisod. We all have to live in multiple worlds. But you know, you can live in multiple worlds while still having both of your feet planted inside the Beis Medrash. Having both of your feet planted inside the world of Torah. Having both of your feet planted within your Yiddishkeit. We can't always live within the walls of the Beis Medrash. Most of us can't live much time inside the walls of the Beis Medrash. But the Shaila is, where are our feet planted? Where are our roots? Where ultimately do we establish our foundation? Because if you try to establish some of your foundation in the world of Torah and some of your foundation outside of the world of Torah, I'll do have come with Joshua. We'll say, clinical tests have shown that what will end up happening is the part of your foundation that is in the world of Torah will be dragged out into that other world. But if you go ahead and you establish your foundation within Torah, then even if sometimes you have to venture out, which inevitably we all have to, nevertheless, because your foundation is in Torah, because both feet are in Torah, you will always remain rooted in that world. So again, you have the Arizal understanding that this is mamish, like Rabbi Yirmiyah is being mistreated over here in the Beis Medrash, but his great schar is that he is the one who poses the shilas in the Masifta Derakia. You have the Gerebbe who explains that this is an incredible metaphor. Don't live life with one foot in, one foot out. You got to be all in. If you want to be a Torah Jew, you have to be all in. Both feet in the base medrash. Establish your foundation in the world of Torah. And then even if you have to venture out, inevitably, as we all have to, ultimately your foundation is solidified. Rabbi, let's just do one more line. Tashma. Tashma nimtza bein shtei shochos v'karov lezeh shalo, karov lezeh shalo. Va'af agav, dechad minayhu nafesh mechavrei. So, also remember again, what did we learn? We learned that if you find the bird in between two dovecotes, right, karov lezeh, v'karov, I'm sorry, karov lezeh shalo, if it's closer to dovecote A, it belongs to dovecote A. Karov lezeh shalo, if it's closer to dovecote B, it belongs to dovecote B. Va'af agav, dechad minayhu nafesh mechavrei. Now, we'll say, even though what? Even though one dovecote has more doves than its fellow. So what do you see from here? You see from here that when there is a conflict between rove and karov, then what wins? Karov wins. Karov wins. And that's a shayla ultimately again in Rabbi Chanina, to which the Gemara says, no, hachamai askinon, shishnein and shavin. Both of them have the same amount of doves. Therefore, there's no conflict between rove and karov. There is no rove, and therefore we go after karov. Aye, v'leizel basar u'b'dalma. But why don't we go after the majority of the world? Rabbi said, there's always a rove, and the rove is not this dovecote. Hacham askinon, what's the case? Rabbi said, b'shvil shalchramim. Rabbi said, the case over here is we're talking about where the pathway ultimately, again, is ultimately filled with vineyards. Rashi says, b'shvil shalchramim, da'idei kramim nadada chutz l'chamishim, u'mir basar u'b'dalma leka l'meizal, du'cholam edadeh, v'chazi l'kino, So what happens? The way it's making its way out is because of the vineyards. Dim ama asi. We'll say if it would have come from somewhere else, kevan dimididi lo matzi asi. It would not have come. It could not have come from somewhere else. Why? Dichol dimididi v'hader chazile v'kine mididi v'ilo lo mididi. We'll say interestingly enough, the way it works with doves is that when a dove is hopping, it will only hop as far as long as it could see what? As long as it could see its shovach, its dovecote. But a dove, if it's hopping, will not hop far enough that it's out of eyesight, or eyeshot, is that the right word? Eyesight of its dovecote. Therefore, in this particular case, we are able to say that because it is within eyesight of its dovecote, that establishes for us that it must belong to that particular dovecote. So we'll stop over here again. So remember, we are still discussing the concept or the conflict between Rov and Karov. So we have Rabbi Chanina telling us that when there is a conflict between Rov and Karov, majority and proximity, we will go after majority. Our Mishnah, the Gemara suggests, seems to not necessarily totally agree with that concept. Mirat session to be continued tomorrow.